forever. Dog.
Comic books, comic time. Writers and artists are on the line. They make a splash as a comic's read and take us on a trip behind the spread. Watch out for comic book commentary. Spinning a winning inside fix, how they got a hot idea. Narrative, character, visual tricks, and bam, onomatopoeia. Uh-huh. It's comic book commentary.
Hi, my name is Chelsea Kane, and I am the creator and writer of Maneaters. And we are here to talk about issue number 6. And I'm here with Leah Mitternique. Hi, Leah.
Hi.
Leah is the cover designer and kind of visual editor and production supervisor, and does a lot of the kind of management of the comic, as well as the interior, like specific design elements. We'll get into that. Also joining us are Stella Greenvoss. Hi, Stella.
Hello.
And Eliza Fantastic Mohan. Hi, Eliza.
Hi.
Eliza and Stella both contribute to the comic. Stella contributes every issue, and Eliza has contributed to 3 or 4 issues. Eliza is also my daughter. They are both recent 14-year-olds. All right, let's get started.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Well, we're going to start with the cover. I guess that's a good place to start, which I don't actually have in front of me.
Yeah, let's see if we can.
But Leah designed it based on.
Well, this one was based on some pop art I think you had found. So we always try to do covers that are evocative in some way, and each one very different from the next, and give you a little bit of insight into the story, but still just kind of make you interested in opening it up. So this one, what had you seen? It was the peace sign was sort of the...
I think actually it was a middle finger originally.
Was it a middle finger?
The reference art. But of course we didn't want to do that. We're provocative, but not that provocative. We really wanted the blood, which is to evoke menstruation. And at the same time, we wanted the blood to not quite read like blood. So it's got this kind of a Dario Argento kind of uncanny coloring to it. So it almost looks like a pie filling or jelly donut. You can tell yourself a story. Actually, it's menstrual blood.
But it's softened by the nice, right, glittery, you know, nail polish that we have that is rainbow colored and
right,
cute.
Which is also kind of setting up a kind of like unicorn payoff that comes later. And then we are moving into the interior cover. We've got a letter from Powell Middle School, and this letter is based on the lice letters that if you're a parent with a kid in public school, you may have gotten. There are a lot of templates online, apparently, because administrators have to send them out a lot. So we took one of those templates and changed it to, like fit our circumstances, which are like cat attacks. So there's been a big cat attack, they think, at the school, and they want to sort of limit the outbreak. Sharon MacArthur, the name of the school nurse at the bottom, is a friend of ours.
Wanted to be included in, I think, the perfect way is the school nurse, really.
Yeah. So as we move in to the like narrative, I want to call out Rochelle Rosenberg, who is our colorist. She's really fantastic. And she actually colored this issue based solely from Kate Niemczyk, our artist's pencil. So usually the pencils go to the inker, and the inker inks the pencils, and then the colorist colors the inks. And Kate's pencils were so tight, and Rochelle is so good, and our timeline was so short that we decided to try something different. And Rochelle colored right from the ink. So like the shadows that you see usually would have been added by the inker, and here they were added by Rochelle. And I think
she's amazing.
The way that she colors this, it kind of gives it a really nice like painterly quality that I think is because the lines are kind of like soft as opposed to the way that they would be if we had had it inked. I think it really lends itself.
Always in some of the, especially the later issues, has kind of put this sort of rough texture to things. And so this really just kind of enhanced that rough texture. So it's not a super clean look.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, so we've got the dad sitting on the bed with the stuffed cat, which just cracks me up. The cat is funny. It was important to me to have. And then the big reveal of the unicorn sitting by Maud's bed, which...
which is great because it's awkward.
Just makes me laugh.
Yeah.
And again, I think like Kate is so good at drawing these characters, and I think she drew the unicorn really beautifully. And the way that Rochelle colored the mask, I think the sort of glossy blankness to it is really effective. The unicorn, I was sort of inspired by, if you've seen the movie Halloween, by Michael and the way that he kind of like stands in the shadows with his white mask. And so there's a little bit of that referenced here. But we spent a lot of time going back and forth on what that unicorn head was going to look like.
Yeah.
So Leah, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, just doing a Google search as to what unicorn masks might be. And I think Chelsea had the idea of it being more of like a mascot, this sort of sweet, nice, crazy little unicorn. And so, yeah, we but it also has hair. So we needed to make sure that it was a one that we could start with something that looked kind of sweet and then, you know, tailor it to our needs. But yeah, so it's just it's supposed to not be a scary unicorn, but a friendly.
It's still a little scary.
A little scary that it's suddenly in your room.
Right.
In the dark.
Mysterious.
Yeah.
The game panels on the next page are really some shout outs to some friends. We have Illimit, which was made by some friends of ours. So I don't think they'll sue us, but I think technically they could. We've got Dungeons & Dragons and then, of course, Yahtzee. One of the things I really wanted to explore in the comic book is Maud's relationship with her parents and seeing her parents like through her point of view and her idea of who her dad is and who her mom is in the wake of this divorce. And coming to understand who her parents like really are along with Maud, as opposed to, you know, so her ideas of who her parents are going to shift. But her idea of who her mom is her mom always wins games. And this is just sort of like, yeah, showing that and showing Maud's dad and Maud kind of being a team, kind of like the two of them kind of being a team and the mom being the third wheel a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the shirts. We went back and forth on that, the shirts that the dad is in. Originally, he was just in solid colors, and I really wanted patterns, and I think Rochelle did a great job delivering some really strange and wonderful patterns that kind of like flesh out his personality and, in my opinion, make him a little sadder.
It is.
We try in the comic to work in a lot of like real world textures and real world images to kind of like draw attention to the fact that this is a story. And you can see the book that Maud is reading is a callback to a previous issue. And we'll see that book again and again. And it's a real person, a real photograph of a person as the author photo instead of using an illustration to, again, kind of drive home the fact that there's different kind of layers of story and this might be real world or it might not be.
Yeah, it's been really fun to work on this. Is the first series that I've done, but just to see the layering that and the storytelling that that can provide. There's so much that if you pay attention, you can come back and find from issue one or issue three. And it's really neat to see that string go all the way through all of these.
Yeah. Like, so my daughter, Eliza, and I both read comic books similarly, which my husband would describe as too fast. Whereas my husband is somebody who really like spends time with a comic. So he might read a floppy like and spend, you know, 15 minutes reading it. Eliza and I flip through it in 3 minutes and are done. And a little part of my husband dies every time that happens. But the thing is, Eliza and I then go back to that comic and we reread it like over and over again. Eliza especially. And I really wanted this comic series to be rereadable in that sense so that I think it really lends itself to going through again and again and in different orders even. And you will notice a lot of little Easter eggs and, you know, actual plot points that exist in the background for careful readers. All right, we flash back to Maud as a younger kid in her bedroom, listening to her parents argue. And actually, I'm not sure how we're going to treat this. This comic is not actually technically completely done as we speak to you today. We are looking at a version that is colored and lettered, but there's still like a few little edits, little hiccups we need to take care of. So some of this podcast is going to be me giving Leah little projects.
It's so fine. With the flashback, this is always a good point at the project. Yeah.
This is a page. The kind of rule we have established in this comic is that when we jump in time, there is an editorial caption that kind of like locates you as a reader. But I don't want to put that kind of caption here because I think it's a really kind of elegant little page and I don't want to distract from it. Mm-hmm. And that I don't want to have to like use an editorial caption on the next page when we jump back to the present. But I also want readers to not be entirely confused and angry. So sure. I was thinking,
okay, let's see.
If we added a little bit of color behind mm-hmm. it, mm-hmm. like a little bit of glow,
yeah,
and even blur a bit of the lines to kind of give it that sense of memory.
Flashback, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can see that.
Okay.
Give our readers a cue. That's nice. then we're back to straight lines on the next page.
Yeah.
Good.
Right, because we're back in the present.
Perfect. Easily done.
You'll notice that
when it comes out.
At the bottom of the page, the mobile scat lab, which Leah drew laboriously, tediously.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to use it as much as possible.
As many issues as that comes up in. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's fun, though. It's it goes back to like the HQ drawings and the old style sort of illustrations that give so much context and you can imagine yourself in that world.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of the cutaway in general. Like certainly growing up reading Marvel comics, like anytime they would do a cutaway to some kind of HQ, those were awesome. So we're referencing that. But my favorite thing about that Scat Lab are all of the little suits lined up on the upstairs floor underneath the helipad. And we're going to try to pay those off because they're so adorable by having SCAT members show up in them occasionally without any explanation.
Right. There's all sorts of duties that are yet to come.
On the next page, we've got this call out to this Soviet propaganda poster. And one of the like narrative styles we use a lot is the idea of this narrative aside, where we pull you out of the kind of main narrative and it's just kind of like a one-panel joke. And that's kind of like going close in to Maud's point of view to make us feel, again, like this is a story that she's telling us. I love the idea of this being Maud's story and the fact that Maud is not a reliable narrator. Mm-hmm. We really are seeing how she imagines her story and like anybody telling a story about their life. It's biased. It's all based on her conceptions, which we are going to challenge.
Yeah, and it just gives a great variety to the artwork as well, too. So it gives interesting layouts and interesting perspective.
Yeah. We're going to skip forward a couple pages because I do want to get Eliza and Stella involved in the discussion. We've got YouTube results. And I guess we're going to call it YouTube in the version that you're looking at. So if you've read about the lawsuit, you'll know why.
You'll know why.
These are results showing the sort of spread of Sophie E's unicorn-headed martial arts queen. And actually, since we're doing live edits, mm-hmm. those visual results.
They'll all be different.
Right, they'll all be different.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. I also like on the opposite page just how pretty the unicorn in the room is in this particular panel.
Uh-huh.
It's colored so beautifully, just sitting there so properly. Mm-hmm. It's very nice.
And then we move into sort of a story within a story, which is the act
through
one
perspective.
Through four. Yeah. With a Kim Kardashian quote, just 'cause. I really think that Joe, our letterer, Joe Caramanga.
I tried to get him to let us know exactly how to pronounce that. But
it's Joe, Joey C.
Yep.
And I like the fact that like the thump, thump, thump is like really, mm-hmm. I think, perfect.
He does a great job.
One of the things that I had not really realized, even as a comic fan, was like how important letterers are. Not only because they obviously like do the treatment of the letters, but the placement of the caption boxes and of the dialogue balloons really affects the pacing of the story and, in my opinion, can like make a story or break it. And I think Joe's really good at that.
Yeah, he's got a good sense of.
Mm-hmm. So lest you think that this whole story is just batshit crazy, in fact, it's all coming together because we see a pencil that Maud has found on her windowsill, the way you do. Uh-huh. And it is a colored pencil from the pencil shop.
From
issue one. Where we see there has been a terrible crime. So it's all coming together. Just stick with us. If you know about colors, and I'm sure you do, you might notice that this pencil is labeled incorrectly.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a clue.
That is a clue, yeah. But Maud does not see that yet. I really like making Kate draw buildings that fill whole pages.
Buildings and vehicles.
Yeah, and she did a great job drawing the back of Maud's apartment building. And she threw in a corgi because she knows I love them. And then Leah has all of these great little signs that give it, again, the real world element. We see the song people are humming. Again, that is like repeated issue to issue and will pay off. Perhaps you can even figure it out now if you think about it. Maud is at school, and we threw in the Wildcats shirt.
It's great.
Again, like, it kills me to have a blank t-shirt. You'll see lots of blank t-shirts, so just know the self-control that I have shown. I would have a logo or a slogan on every single t-shirt or a wild pattern. But I only do what I can. Sometimes Leah just starts to cry.
There's only so many hours in the day. You know? But I love the idea of like creating this school, and the school of course has a mascot, and there's, you know, even the letterhead from the school. It's so fun to just really get into the world versus just leave it at.
Yeah. Get it, Wildcats. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
And then at school, Maud begins to notice some other kids who also have colored pencils, and that is curious. All right, so you'll see in the classroom, Maud kind of leaning into frame, talking to Eliza, who is named after Eliza right here. Eliza has not even seen these pages yet, but there's a whole conversation. You're going to love it. You look great.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love the overhead shot of all of the kids at desks in that classroom. In fact, I love it so much that the version I'm looking at has lots of dialogue. And one of my notes for Joey C is to cut all that dialogue. I don't want any words on that panel because I think it's so effective. And I think I don't want to block any of it with word balloons. And I don't want to draw the reader's attention away from just how lovely that is visually.
Yeah.
So we see in this overhead shot, like a lot of kids have these pencils, and they're all kind of like leaning forward with their pencils outstretched to show Maud
like
and Eliza. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk to you, Leah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see. What do I need to do here?
I thought, because mm-hmm. these little test pages are all blank.
Oh, sure.
If the kids with the colored pencils, if we can see a little bit of like scribbling on those uh-huh. test pages in whatever color pencil they're handing out, and then the kids who don't have colored pencils, it would just be pencil colored. Right?
We can do that.
That would be neat.
Yeah. And it would reinforce our color element through the whole issue.
There is a color element through the whole issue, you guys.
Unicorns.
Yeah.
All comes back.
Right. So, you know, like you've read the issue, obviously, if you're listening to this. And the all of the color stuff and the colored pencil stuff all relates back to the unicorn and the unicorn mane. And the whole idea of like, yeah, this sort of rainbow. So we're trying to tell, obviously, a visual story. And a lot of that is these visual elements that again, like, make a lot more sense on the second or third read. But I think it's really cool.
Yeah. You'll really appreciate it when you get to it.
It's going to be so great. Yeah, we
a lot of dialogue on that page. It's really great.
You might notice with the sort of mug shots. I should probably say the page number, but we're not looking at page numbers here,
right?
Because they're all kind of paginated differently. Mm-hmm. But the page with all of the girls' mug shots and the colors behind the girls' heads, that page I'm pretty happy with. I'm happy.
Yeah, it worked out great.
Right. One of the edits with coloring, Rochelle had just drawn those with just sort of regular panel blocks behind them. So to reinforce our awesome coloring theme so that you could appreciate it all the more mm-hmm. by knowing about it,
yes.
We decided to put...
It doesn't require explanation, but it's good to have it. Yeah,
decided to have the actual colors behind each kid that coordinates with the pencil that kid has found and also mm-hmm. with their outfits.
Their outfits and their backpacks
yeah.
when we get to it.
Though I am noticing that Maude mm-hmm. is in the wrong color shirt in the version we're looking at here.
Easily changed. Yes. We'll fix that up.
No biggie. Next page. I'm a big fan of floor. You'll notice lots of linoleum in the worlds that I create.
Such good patterns.
Such good patterns. And a really excellent pimple. And
which was enhanced after the first version, which I like. I had a really good, strong reaction to it until she's like,
clearly
no, it's
did
not
acne.
Enough. This one's very, very clear.
The puberty observation form is one of my favorite things, possibly that we have done in this comic hitherto. It is pretty funny. And that, obviously, Leah designed taking a Scantron form that she found on the internet and stole.
Oh, no,
well,
no.
Modifying.
Completely, yeah, completely recreated. Yeah. It's nothing.
Right. Well, yeah, she moves stuff around. She added the lady. It's all fine.
But it's such a good classic. We've all seen those forms. And if something's going to be just very, what they would do in the most typical circumstance, this is that form.
Yeah, and the whole idea of taking puberty, like a girl's puberty, and making it this kind of like metric that is observed and like quantified
recorded.
And monitored,
mm-hmm.
It's so true, right? Like culturally, we do that. We just don't. We don't actually have forms, but it happens. And much of this comic, at least my attempt, is to really just describe the real world
Through metaphor,
right? Through metaphor,
yeah.
You get it, Leah. You get
I get
me.
It. You know, six issues in, I'm right there with you.
Mm-hmm. And we see those pencils, and we see those girls. And again, you might notice the backpacks all line up with their particular pencils, and the pencils are in the order of a rainbow. All of that is not by accident. We've got some Google results. Might have to change that brand name.
Yeah, it could be.
Showing all of the pencil shops in Portland, Oregon. There are actually a couple. Portland is adorable.
Portland's perfect for that.
And you can see also why I don't want to have an editorial caption note every time we go back to the bedroom with Maude and her dad, because it would happen a lot.
Yeah.
And that would be... irritating.
And Maude with her little cap that she wears is always a good indicator of what
her pussy hat.
Her pussy hat.
It's not a pussy cap, Leah.
It's not a cap, but it's a good indication of that we're on the current day.
This pussy hat is based on a pussy hat that Stella's mom knit me.
Nice.
So
I didn't know.
That's awesome. We see the unicorn and the army of girls that. Honestly, is just a total reference to the last season of Buffy. And then, girls, you're almost up. And then toward the end, we have, again, the unicorn sitting in the bedroom, and the dad's phone is ringing, and he's got this really geeky song. Again, pretty sure we'll get sued for that. I might have to change it to "This Land Is Your Land." There's something that's in the public domain.
So I think there's only seven or eight things in this issue that are potentially...
Yeah, that's fine.
That's no big deal.
It'll be so much publicity when we go to jail. So his phone is ringing, and it's this kind of silly song because he still has feelings for Maude's mom. And I love the idea that he has come at the beginning of this issue because he wants to protect Maud from her mom finding out, right? And by the end of the issue, he's trying to figure out if he should tell Maud's mom. Like, he's sort of gone 180 on that, mm-hmm. to now, like, realizing that there really is only one person who can help. Yeah. And it's Maud's mom. So we have, like, not only, like, there's, like, a relationship evolution there that I think really, to me, is kind of, like, that's the narrative movement of this whole issue, is getting to that beat, mm-hmm. of the dad changing. What, you know, like, and Maud's perception of her dad's shift, because really, in terms of the main narrative, this is just like 10 minutes, you know, is moved forward. Like, the dad comes in, sits on Maud's bed. They have a conversation that is punctuated by a whole lot of story within story, mm-hmm. as Maud tells him things and, you know, does these mental asides. And then we come back and they finish the conversation and boom, like, not a whole lot has happened, except there's been this evolution of understanding about the dynamics of this family relationship.
Yeah.
Which is everything.
Which is everything.
Yeah. And we're going to bring Stella in. So Stella, at the end of every issue, we always want to go usually on the to be continued page, really close in to Maud's point of view. And Stella Greenboss, who is a terrific artist, does all of our art for that beat. So every single animal, and they are always animals.
It seems to be, yeah.
Might start using houses. We saw Stella's sketchbook today. We're going to maybe just publish her work from now
right.
on. So in the first issue, it is a little bird. And there's always, there's like a little narrative payoff to the specific animal. Like, if you give it some thought, you'll figure it out. And here I asked Stella to draw a unicorn. And Stella, she did. She sent me some like wonderful sketch pages of various like horses and unicorns. And the one that we decided to go with, in fact, I loved the pages she had sent so much, which were just photographs of her actual sketchbook. And on one of them, she had written, "I swear I'm not a horse girl. Chelsea is making me draw these." And that is the one that I very much wanted to use. And that is what is here. So I'll let Stella talk a little bit about her process.
I was planning on doing a couple pieces that were with like full color and very detailed.
Yeah, and you did.
And you did, exactly.
They
were lovely.
So many things.
Yeah.
But these were my preliminary sketches. Mm-hmm. I don't even think I used pencil for these. And they were just meant to be stupid sketches, but Chelsea likes them, I guess, so they're going in a comic. The horse girl comment, it's both for me in the future and I guess for any observers, because one, I don't want me to look back on this phase where I drew like maybe 4 pages in my sketchbook of horses, and I don't want to be like, ooh, you loved horses back then. Mm-hmm. And I also, I don't want anyone else to think that. Not that there's anything wrong with being a horse girl. I don't want to come across as that. And also, horses. People, like, have careers based on drawing horses.
They're really hard to draw.
They're so hard to draw. Mm-hmm. I don't know the proportions of a horse. Mm-hmm. So that's that, I guess.
You did great.
And you managed it very well.
Stella had sent so many pages, including 2 that were fully, like, you used Copics, right?
Yes.
Fully Copics'd out, like, full color, beautiful, Technicolor.
The
like,
ones that would normal people would use. Yeah,
yeah. Right. Unicorns.
Yeah.
And but unfortunately, she also sent some of her working sketches, which, again, were so great. And I really feel this responsibility writing this comic, which is so much about the inner life of this 12-year-old, to get as close to that as I can. And like, in reality, Stella is such a better artist than any 12-year-old. Again, Stella is 14, but like her perspective, mm-hmm. is everything. Like, ending visually on something that is actually close to the way, you know, to the lens of that experience. And one of the things I really loved about using the sketchbook page is that we see it as a sketchbook page. So you can see the little bit of art table Which is Stella's art table around the page. You can see a little bit of her thumb.
Yeah, my dirty thumb.
Her dirty thumb.
It's really gross.
Her thumb was so clean. We added in that dirt digitally to make it read more real.
Yeah.
And then of course the words. That is like I could not have written that.
Right.
Like I could not have written that. Only Stella Greenboss could have written that. And only, frankly, I think a 14-year-old could have written that. It's so aware of, her future self and the whole notion of, like, not being a horse girl, which is, like, aren't we all not horse girls?
Well, it was funny from the very first time we saw her sketchbook and just looking through it, like, we noticed all of these things, like, that we wouldn't think to do anymore, mm-hmm. right? Because we're just out of that time in our lives. And so it really is just wonderful to look through it and be like,
yeah, it's brilliant.
Oh,
well, just the meta notes
authentic.
Are so great that I like, which you have. And we actually used a few of them in issue mm-hmm. one.
Yeah.
In the first issue, like, they used a drawing of my two favorite YouTubers, and it's one of my least favorite drawings in that sketchbook. So I wrote, ew, this is so gross, or something next to it. And then they used all of that.
It was perfect. Yeah.
And I was ready to be crucified by those YouTubers' fandom, but I don't think they picked it up.
So, well, now they'll know.
Right?
All right. Let's bring Eliza in, too. I say bring her in. She's sitting right here, mic'd up with headphones. Eliza has contributed to... previous issues, issue three.
She's got a big
she
one in number
has
five.
A big essay, right, about Phoenix, her cat.
Right.
Number four, she writes the letters column. And number five, she has a poem called Here I Am, featuring, again, that terrible, wonderful unicorn mask.
So good.
So, Eliza, how did you get roped into this?
Well, I mean, you are my mother, so you started... like asking my friends to do stuff, and I knew eventually it would be my turn. And then,
why isn't she asking me yet?
I mean, my mother came up and asked me to do a story from the point of view of a cat, and I thought, you know, I should probably do my cat since, but it's very difficult to get inside my cat's head. Like, it's an ongoing family joke. Like, what is she thinking right now? Because she's a very peculiar cat, and I thought it would be nice to try to put myself, like, inside her head, like, in her shoes. And so I did that, and of course, I made her love me very much because that's how I hope she sees me, though I'm not sure. And I just sort of, like, sat down and, like, tried to think, like, what does my cat think every day? And she's very independent, so she went outside and has relationship. We like to think that she has relationships to, like, all the cats in the neighborhood because there are quite a few, and that she sort of, like, rules the neighborhood because she's very sassy and queen-like.
And one of the things that, like, I loved about that piece, Eliza, because I didn't give you any direction except write from the point of view of a cat. And yet, and again, this is why I think it's so important that Eliza she's 14 now, but she was 13 when she read that, that she write it, because that story about this cat longing to go out and yet getting out, and then this call back into the house and the comfort of going back inside, I think is so much about the experience of being a 13, 14-year-old kid. It really is. And it is that kind of authenticity that I think, that we strive for and that I appreciate. Stella, what is your favorite of the layouts that you've done? And I will hand you a volume so you can look.
Ooh. Off the top of my head, I was very surprised when they used the beetle in, I think, either issue 3 or 4.
3.
Because I hadn't sent anything in for that, and I was like, I screwed up. But they used this beetle that I had drawn a very long time ago, and it looks cool. So I like that one a lot. I also like in the first,
I'm laughing because I like that was like that first day we were looking through a sketchbook, and I just took these photos of the pages.
Yeah.
Like,
oh. Yeah.
Yeah, it was what we needed for that particular one.
I liked in the cat attack volume. Which one is that?
4.
In 4, they asked me to do like zodiac cats, and I didn't know what that meant. So I just drew some cats with like zodiac features, and that was a mad dash to get that done. I think I had like 2 days to finish it.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It was
how
amazing.
Fast you turned that around.
And there were like two separate versions of everything. Like it wasn't just like, here's my sketches. It was like final, complete, beautiful.
Yeah. And one of the days I was working on that was my birthday.
Oh my
gosh.
So
it was a lot of like, I need to get this done. But I had such a good time because I like was exploring the zodiac signs and I was exploring these different types of cats. And I really like how the pages turn out. So that was also one of my favorite contributions, I think.
We did an event at Rose City Comic Con, which is a comic convention here in Portland, all of us. We set up a Ministry of Trouble help desk. So the company, Leah and I formed a company to produce the comic. And then we partner with Image, which is so complicated. You'll just have to look that up and figure it out. But our company is called Ministry of Trouble, which is fun because all of these, the girls who write for us, as well as our entire adult creative team, everybody gets checks from Ministry of Trouble, which is just neat.
Yeah.
And we thought it would be fun to kind of go with that. And we set up this whole Ministry of Trouble help desk where we had forms people could fill out because everybody loves forms.
It turns out people really
people
do like forms.
We had a patriarchy suggestion box where people could write suggestions to the patriarchy. And Stella, we were all there signing comics, and Stella brought her art and sold quite a bit of it.
Yeah, I sold like $150 worth
or
something like that. So, yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and those cats, those horoscope cats, just saying, like, you people find her. Like, I don't know if her parents want me giving out her Instagram handle.
No, it's totally fine.
Go ahead. Just do it.
Yeah, I'm at loneliest.robot. And spell loneliest right, because nobody gets it right.
Right, you heard it here.
But I promise it's spelled right in my handle.
Yeah, and Stella is like has prints and original work that is for sale, and including the actual like art from the comics, which is like really brilliant. Eliza, what's been your favorite piece so far?
I just found out recently that my poem is in the comic, but I'm really
I told you. You just hadn't
forgot
seen
it. I have a very bad memory.
Yeah, you
but
sent it.
I'm really proud of that because I based it off of a song. I just for a exercise at school, we watched this video of this woman playing her cello on the edge of a cliff in this like just beautiful scenery, and then we were told to write a story about it. And instead of a story, I wrote a poem. And I'm just really proud of that because it's like all the emotion conveyed through words, but like transformed from music. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, it's terrific. That's in issue 5.
Yep.
All right. Anything else to add, team? Yeah, like there's clearly a whole year's worth of like women's studies that I could get into with this comic. But I assume if you're reading it, you probably have figured a lot of that out. It's not subtle because I think we're past subtle right now. I think we're past needing subtle. We love making it. We hope to keep doing it.
Absolutely.
And the volume, Klex issues 1-4, and that is out in March. And that will be out, you know, in bookstores. You can pre-order it now. You can get it at your local independent bookstore. And the issues come out monthly, every month.
Yeah, last Wednesday of every month.
Yep. Just keeps happening. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.